Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today, I am totally blasted to have Pete Brown, who is a WinXAML evangelist from Microsoft, commonly known as the XAML and Gadget Guy, also known as my ex-boss, and truly a great guy all around. Pete, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I am very well, and really pleased to have you here.
Can I just say that thank you so much for leaving so I don't have to deal with your expenses anymore? That was the bane of my existence. Boy, I loved having you work for me, but holy crap, the expenses.
Yours and mine.
Yeah.
Not my strength.
Now I'm doing that with another boss, and they're just like, wow, you're pretty bad about expenses, aren't you? I'm like, yeah, this is a sort of, I'm your Jesse, you know?
That is a heck of a way to start. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So you have changed positions. Is that accurate?
Yes, I have. So I used to be, you remember the group that we were in was EPX, and I honestly forget what that stands for because I know it was changed a few times, but you know, it moved through a couple of different groups, and it was originally tied to the Silverlight.net site and the Windows client sites and the ASP sites and whatnot. And so that group kind of shifted over time to be more content, like really kind of planned content and engineering for MSDN, which obviously wasn't really a fit for kind of what our team did. So had John go and look to see where he might work, and he joined evangelism for doing Azure, which was pretty cool. John Galloway, sorry. And then once he was all settled, I went over and talked to a platform evangelism team, specifically the ones that are focused around the developer story for Windows 8 primarily. And I landed a job there for focusing on XAML and kind of helping people understand XAML in Windows 8 and helping like Silverlight developers and WPF developers who want to move to Windows 8 figure out how to get their code over and, you know, doing a lot of kind of interesting technical things on that side.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
And it's tons of work, first of all. It's the group that John Papa used to be in. And remember, John would sort of like go dark right before conferences?
Yes.
And now I totally understand why he was doing that, because, you know, just preparing for things like Tech Ed here have been totally nuts.
And have you got a lot of good stuff in store for Tech Ed?
Yeah, there's some pretty cool things there. I'm hoping that what I'm putting together now actually shows up. You know, there's always a possibility that you build something awesome and then the executive looks at it and like, this is crap. And then it never moves beyond that point. So I'm hoping it's not crap and they end up using it during Tech Ed.
Worse, they could even say, this is great, and end up not using it. So
yeah, I mean, there is that too, which is, I don't know which one hurts more, but yeah.
Right. Well, unfortunately, I got bumped from Tech Ed. We have, Telerik has about 400 people going, and they said, okay, enough already.
Thank you for buying all those tickets, by the way.
So I won't be there, but I'll be there in spirit, and very excited about some of what I hear is coming out, so it should be interesting times.
I understand. Is it Telerik or Telerik?
Telerik.
You tell me, you worked
there. Telerik. Actually, it's very interesting. Telerik was named after Telerig, who was a Khan, as in Genghis Khan.
Oh, I thought you meant Khan as in ex-criminal.
Right,
or
no.
Oh, okay.
Khan of Bulgaria in the Middle Ages. I knew you'd want to know that.
That's almost as fascinating as those really bizarre pictures they pick for the front of the Manning books and stuff, where it's like, you know, the costumes from 400 years ago and medieval stuff. But
what anyway, I particularly like is that they changed the name from Telerig to Telerik because they thought it would be easier for English speakers. Okay.
Yeah, I guess there's that whole, what's that called, like a glottal sound or whatever, where we'd rather have a K at the end of something. But interesting. Okay, because I've always heard Telerik is the right way, and somebody go and tell Hanselman that it should be pronounced Telerik, I guess. But yeah, you guys have like a whole building just for your booth, right?
I believe that's correct. Yes, a small city.
Yeah. Cool. So is there anything that Telerik is going to be showing off there that you can talk about now?
Yes, repeat, no.
Okay.
We'll be there. We'll be there with a significant presence. And beyond that, I just got this job. I want to keep it.
You know, I oddly find myself in a similar situation. So, but there should be lots of cool stuff at Tech Ed. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So tell me about what you're working on in terms of writing. Let's start there.
So I'm working on a Windows 8 book right now.
You are.
Which will be focused on XAML. I understand I am one of about 7,000 people working on a Windows 8 book, which is promising. I believe you're one of the other people, right?
Yes. Well, I'm supposed to be. We'll see how it goes.
And I do everything in my power to sabotage you and send you incorrect information and stuff whenever I can to make sure that your book doesn't do well.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, because it's hard to compete with the guy who has, what do you have, like 15 pages of books at Amazon?
There's numbers and then there's royalties, and we can have that discussion someday.
Having just completed a Silverlight 5 book, I understand about the royalties. But anyway, so I'm working on the Windows 8 XAML book, and it's specifically focused around C# and XAML, not C++ and XAML. I've been told it needs to be half the size of my previous book, or else they're going to just give up on me and say forget it. I have a really hard time writing small books. I feel like everything needs to be in there. I'm getting really excited to release the meep of that, but I'm just so far behind on writing that. That I don't have quite as much ready for today as I had hoped.
MEEP?
The first MEEP. So MEEP, besides being that weird noise that those things on Sesame Street made, right? MEEP is Manning Early Access Program. It's there, like what some of the other groups or some of the other publishers do, like what in progress things, or I can't remember what they're called.
Half-baked, or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, they have all sorts of names for it. But the idea is you get to see the stuff before it's been through the real editing process. So you get early access to the direct from the author electronic versions of the files, so you can start being productive right away. I think it's a pretty good approach, because nobody really wants to wait until the final product is released to get started. So I think that works well.
What about feedback? Do you get good feedback from that program that then goes into the final book?
It depends. Like I would like to have good feedback, but like I know like Silverlight 4 in Action that I wrote was, I think, pretty popular for a tech book. But most of the feedback I got from that from folks was, hey, you missed some punctuation over here or stuff, sort of the easy things
right.
to pick up on before it goes through a real editing process. And unfortunately, I didn't start getting like real technical feedback, like, hey, you could do better on this part or this part, until it had already, like, that chapter was already going into production. So it's kind of like, ouch,
yes.
I won't be able to do anything with that until the next version. And I found that pretty consistent with the Silverlight 5 version of the book as well. So I tend to rely a lot more on some trusted tech editors. There's a guy local to me who I've known for a long time. We used to work at the same company, who's tech edited both Silverlight 4 in Action and Silverlight 5 in Action. It's Tom McKerney. Sort of a shout out to Tom here. And he did a great job with those and focused on real usability. And he's one of those guys that won't pull any punches when he's talking about it. So sometimes it might make you cry a little bit, but at least the feedback is useful. And I'll probably have him involved in the Windows 8 book as well.
That's great. So talk to me about Windows 8. I know you can't say much about your book yet, but talk to me about how you've been learning Windows 8 and what coming up the learning curve has been like.
So my background was in Silverlight and WPF, right? And, sort of the same background that you have, except I think you were more Silverlight than phone. Nevertheless, the guys that have those backgrounds like us, I think are pretty well positioned to pick up Windows 8. Because I know you've been learning some things in it as well. But if you start looking at it, you're like, hey, this is XAML. It works just like it did before. Hey, most of these controls kind of work the same way they did before. But, oh, this API over here is really bizarre. Or, if I want to get access to the webcam, it's a little different process. So there's really just a lot of trial and error there for figuring things out. And I find myself constantly going back to our dev.windows.com examples that we have posted, where I won't say that those are perfect. Some of them are far more complicated, I think, than they need to be. But they've been really good for, real quick access to syntax for some things that aren't immediately obvious when you start hunting through the object browser or something. And there's some learning curve. The XAML stack in Windows 8 is not quite the same as what we had in Silverlight 5. It's a full re-implementation, so it's sort of like one of the older revs of Silverlight. But having been there as well, I found, that it's still pretty easy to pick up.
So you're finding that you're coming up and understanding Windows 8 pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I think it also helps that I've been messing around with WPF 4.5 a little bit as well, because the Windows 8 XAML apps are built on both the Windows runtime and .NET 4.5. So there's the two pieces there where, a lot of folks sort of mistakenly believe that it's just the Windows runtime, but we have a huge pile of .NET 4.5 stuff that you can use, and that's where a lot of the task library stuff comes from, and a lot of the usual kind of like the web access stuff that we worked on, et cetera. And that's pretty compatible with what you're using on the desktop. It's actually a subset of that, sort of like what we did with Silverlight. And I found having some experience in WPF 4.5 and doing asynchronous stuff there and whatnot really helps with working on Windows 8.
But I gotta play the idiot here because I...
Something you do very well, you know, I understand. It's
my... Thank you. My expertise. You have to be good at something. Yes. So
you walked right into that.
I did. Opened the door and walked right through. And not only that, but then lost my train of thought along the way. The as I try to understand Win 8, and as I read the documentation, I find myself nodding my head and saying, yep, that makes sense. And then sitting down in front of the computer and going, now what?
Yeah.
And it's sort of like the experience I had with Calm, where it all made perfect sense in theory, but then when I had to sit down to do it, it wasn't as obvious how to get started.
Yeah, I have several books on how to play the piano, right? and you see where this is going. You read all the stuff. Sure, it makes perfect sense. Oh, yes, that's the particular type of chord form and stuff. Then sit me down in front of a piano and I'm like, ah, you know, it's always about practice. You know, that first application or a couple of applications are going to involve a fair bit of head scratching and some sweating and stuff to get through it. But once you've done that, once you've baselined and once you've figured out, hey, all these important settings are over in that APEX manifest that I need to go in and look at. And oh, yes, async is everywhere, but it's really, you know, easy to use with the async keyword. And you know, instead of system.windows in these places, we have windows.system in some places, which is bizarre if you're a .NET developer looking at it the first time.
That's just evil. That right there is just evil.
I won't say that it's... Yeah, I totally understand why we did that. Oh, you know, all the WinRT stuff starts off with windows.whatever, but it can lead to some odd namespaces if you're used to .NET world. But I will say that just the fact that we're even talking about that, just the fact that WinRT looks like .NET,
yes,
is a huge nod to .NET developers and kind of something that makes it much easier for us to pick up. But anyway, so, you know, when you start going through those first applications that you're building, it'll be kind of hard for you. But I think what really does help, and this is again a nod to the folks over in the Windows doc teams and all the people that help build those samples and EPX and MSDN and whatnot, those samples that are available for C++ and C# and JavaScript and everything else up on dev.windows.com can actually help you with figuring out the syntax and getting you past those little hurdles.
I do find, and this is a complaint that I have had from day one with virtually every demo I've seen from every company I've worked for or dealt with, is that there is, as you alluded to earlier, an unnecessary complexity. And instead of just showing you, okay, you want to do feature A, here's feature A in the simplest possible way, what sneaks in is the, hey, we could do something kind of cool here, and levels of indirection that then make the whole demo a whole lot harder to figure out.
Yeah, that's kind of a personal beef I have with stuff, but I've come to realize that that's a particular learning style that maybe you and I both share, but isn't sort of universally appreciated. Other folks like the more complicated examples, but usually I'm very focused. Like, I need to figure out how on earth I do a share contract, right? Like, how do I provide some data so that, and this is in part of the demo I wrote the other day, how do I provide some data that I can use to then send to an email client, right? Finding a simple example of that can be difficult sometimes because it includes a lot of other stuff baked into the samples. And I find that a little more difficult. However, somebody who's just coming in and they want to run an application and they want to see more, here are all the different options for doing share and here's kind of a best practice and stuff, those samples are more useful to them. But yes. I just tend to be more focused. You know, it's like show me the particular feature doc, and then I can sort of infer best practices from that, and I can learn the rest of the API based on, you know, IntelliSense and Object Browser and things along those lines.
That makes sense. Now, when you say that was for a demo, was that for your book or for something else?
This is the thing I've been working on quietly for the past week. So, you know, I'm hoping that this actually gets used, and then if it gets used, I'll be talking all about it. And if it doesn't get used, I'll just sort of quietly into the background.
Okay, well, we'll have to have you come back after TechEd and let us know whether it got used and what it was.
Sure.
This is a funny time in the life of Windows 8 in particular, and XAML programmers in general, is that I keep having these conversations where we're tiptoeing around the edges of things that are not quite ready to talk about yet. And
yeah.
What's
always the case, but yeah.
Well, that's right. If we wait for that barrier to come down, there'll be the next thing over the horizon. When you're spending your time on Windows 8? Let me try that again in English. What percentage of your time would you say is spent on Windows 8 as opposed to other XAML development?
So over the past couple of weeks, I've only been in a new org for, I think, a week and a half or 2 weeks or something like that. So not that long. And in that time, I did a VS Live talk on WPF 4.5, and I did a VS Live talk on Silverlight 5, and then also a VS Live talk on Windows 8 XAML. And then most of the rest of the time has been focused primarily on Windows 8, in preparation for upcoming releases and stuff. I know Steven Sanofsky said that we'll be releasing it here at the beginning of June, so it's coming up very quickly. So it's been almost 100% Windows 8 for the past couple of weeks here. I also put out some stuff on how to use like async and Silverlight and everything. So I still try and mix in the Silverlight stuff and WPF stuff in there, but I am sort of, quite honestly, the Windows 8 stuff is newer and more exciting to me right now. You know, you and I have similar personalities in terms of our difficulty of focus and sort of like what it takes to keep us interested.
Technology attention deficit.
Exactly. And so, you know, the Windows 8 stuff right now feels a lot to me like those early days of Silverlight, where there's something brand new and you get to go in and sort of investigate all the dark corners of it and figure out exactly what it can do and what it can't do and where it's going to fit in. And I love being in early on technology like that, so I'm definitely focusing a lot of time on that. But at the same time, I'm keeping, you know, the WPF 4.5 stuff, that's not even a released product yet, so I'm definitely staying involved in that, and Silverlight as well. You know, we just released that in December, but again, with a much stronger focus on Windows 8.
And just in passing, you said that Sanofsky said there's going to be a release in early June. What will that release be?
So that is, and we've changed the names of some things. So it is the release preview of Windows 8, and presumably we'll have the tooling and everything alongside that.
So that we can expect is anticipated to be the final release before release to manufacturing.
Yeah, I don't even try to guess what all the different milestones that the Windows team has. They tend to find what works really well for them and their customers and just go with it. So I don't want to assume that there's one release preview or RC or whatever you want to call it, or there's other stuff before the final release. Yeah, I honestly don't even want to guess.
Okay, let me not take you there. Do we know anything about what's going to be in this release in early June?
I think we've seen some screenshots of some UI directions. Now, whether or not that shows up in this release preview is open to question, because on the Windows 8 blog, for example, he said that you'll see some of this stuff in the preview, but maybe not so much or not complete, and that you'll see more of it in the final release, et cetera, et cetera. I'd assume that we're going to see new tooling. You know, we tend to release at least the Windows 8 specific version of Visual Studio and stuff along with this. So I would expect to see that with maybe more color, like the screenshots showed, and sort of that less Battleship gray, which was interesting and
popular,
less colons in title bars and stuff like that, right? So
I see
now with 50% fewer colons, I guess is
had a colonectomy. Sorry,
but yeah, I would expect to see all that stuff pretty soon, and you know, probably some API changes and stabilization and all the usual things that you would expect to see in something as we approach a release.
So what are you doing right when you're writing a book and these releases keep changing everything?
So the funny thing is the screenshots of Windows 8 XAML in action up until recently all had sort of old look and feel for different products and stuff. And so, you know, once we make public the current versions, and I have to go through and update a lot of screenshots and make sure there are no API changes. But, you know, you're always kind of chasing that. Like, you know, between the release preview and the final release, presumably there will be some additional UI tweaks and stuff. But I don't really get to work those into the book until it actually gets to be released, because, you know, I can't share that stuff with the publishers, and clearly I can't share that stuff, you know, with the early access program. And honestly, if I kept updating it every time we made a little tweak to the UI or changes, I'd be sort of, you know, find all my time in Photoshop as opposed to actually writing the book.
Right, right. But you sound buoyant about Windows 8, and I know some of that is because it's new, but also there's a sense of coolness here.
Yeah, you know, I have held out. I do not own an iPad. I am one of five people at Microsoft that does not have an iOS device. And I've just been kind of like holding out that I really wanted to get a Windows tablet when those come out because I see a lot of potential to that. And this was even before, that sounded awful evangelical, I guess, here. But even before joining that group, it's something that I've been excited about. I've always, you know, I have this thing where I generally don't carry around a device unless I know I can code for it. It's just even if I never write a program for it, I try not to carry around any devices I can't code for. And iOS and iPad and stuff, they're pretty cool, but I don't have a Mac, right? So I'm not going to code for that. I'm not particularly interested in learning Objective-C, although some of the stuff that Miguel and folks have done over in Mono is pretty cool. I could definitely look into that. But the Windows 8 stuff, I'm very interested in being able to program that, not just on the C# and XAML side, but even investigating a bit more on the C++ side. You know, I've started doing a lot of C++ with microcontrollers, and I even did an IE add-in at one point, but it sort of blew my mind, the kind of macro-ish of C++ these days. But I'm interested in investigating C++ in Metro and messing around a little bit with DirectX and some visualizations and whatnot, and kind of getting back to my roots there, because I think you started on punch cards, but I started on C++.
You had zeros, we had to use O's.
Yes. We didn't even have zeros. I had I started on C++ way back. You know, probably my first application I ever wrote that I got paid to write was a Borland C++ 3 application for DOS that I didn't know about DBase and stuff at the time. So I wrote my own database engine using B-trees. I was in school for computer science at the time, so of course I did this, right?
Of course.
And I got paid to do it, and they had this whole little application with database and data entry and all that stuff that could have been whipped out in DBase in 2 days, but I only took about a month to write it in C++ and writing all that stuff myself. But I'd be happy to kind of get back to some of the C++ roots. And the idea of combining XAML with C++ in Windows 8 is pretty exciting, because then you don't have to mess around with MFC or any of those other full UI stacks that I don't have experience with.
Right. Right. Well, I want to come back to talking about C++, and you began to allude to gadgets, and I definitely want to ask you about that as well. But in terms of the C# and XAML programming that you're doing with Windows 8, has there been anything new or any challenges that have come up that are really kind of different from what you were used to?
I think the thing that trips most people up is when you get in there, you find out you can do stuff like pinvoke, and you find out that you can access these other APIs that you thought you wouldn't be allowed to access, but you don't realize that those are kind of verboten until you go in and run the store verification tool against them, the certification tool. Mm-hmm. We call it WAC. It's the Windows Application Certification Kit, right? Until you run that, you don't realize that you're using things that aren't allowed. So I think on one of the Telerik blogs, actually, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think on one of the blogs there, one of the guys showed this really cool example of how to use GDI Plus. Not that you'd want to use GDI Plus here, but we'll humor, because it was just kind of a cool example. GDI Plus on a Metro application, but the APIs that he imported and used pinvoke for that are not ones that would pass store verification.
Right.
So I had mentioned something to him that's like, hey, this is really cool, and we all love this and stuff, but we just need to make it clear to folks that they need to run this tool to verify that what they're doing is okay. You know, and you'll kind of know for the most part when you're sort of entering those areas, and the trick is just to run this verification tool. So that, I would say, is one of the biggest things that trips people up. And then maybe the second thing is just going in and starting from some of the templates. Like the templates that we have, unless you start with the blank template, are kind of consumption oriented. So if you're building like a consumption application where you're going to drill down on, say, like, you know, RSS feeds or something like that, they work really well. But if you're doing more of a creation application or a business application or something like that, knowing kind of which template to use and when to just go with the blank template and use the controls there and stuff is probably also a bit of a challenge. But both of those come with experience.
Sure. Let's talk for a minute about the templates. There are templates that you can use when you start your project, and then there are templates you can use as you add pages to your project.
Yes.
Are they the same set of templates? Are they the same kinds of controls in them?
Yeah, they are. And speaking specifically on the XAML side, they've done a lot of work there to try and make those or to try to make those very compatible and take a lot of the extra work out of doing the right thing. Like you'll find even rudimentary MVVM support and stuff in some of those templates that I think is pretty helpful. Now, I've talked with some of the folks on the team. I think in some cases those templates can break down pretty quickly, but I think for, you know, getting up to speed right away or learning how to use some of the elements, especially like the new list view and grid view and stuff like that, they're very, very useful. And again, for certain consumption-oriented applications, I also think they're very useful as well. And then the individual page templates are the same thing. So, you know, there's a blank page which has nothing, and then there's, I believe it was a standard page or something like that, which is one of the same pages that's used in the other templates.
Let's switch over for a moment. I notice your signature now says something about Gadget Guy, and I'd like to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, my signature is Microsoft XAML and Blinking LED Guy, right?
That's it.
Yeah. So I figure if it has a blinking LED, I'm kind of interested. And I do a lot with microcontroller work. It's a hobby of mine that I think teaches you some skills that building applications for multi-gigahertz, multi-gigabyte machines doesn't really teach you. You know, writing applications for devices that have memory measured in K and speed measured in single-digit megahertz gives you, I think, a different perspective on application development versus building things for the desktop.
So this is 1980 nostalgia.
Yeah, I think it's that. But at the same time, I think it's bringing back around a couple of things that were lost when all those types of computers from the 80s went away. I mean, I'm not going to turn this into a kind of a nostalgia thread, or you'll lose half your listeners, I think.
Getting us down to one, but go ahead.
Right. A lot of people started on things like the Commodore 64 or the Apple II or whatnot, where you went into it and there was no framework for anything. You just you booted into a BASIC interpreter, essentially. And you had direct access to pretty much everything on the machine, and you could, of course, do assembly and stuff. But you were there, and there was very easy to do hello world in those types of situations. And then doing those for the desktop now, or phones or devices, and whether or not they're from Apple or whether they're Android devices or Microsoft devices, there's a significantly larger amount of effort and things you need to come up to speed on before you can get from zero to hello world, right? So I think one of the appeals of microcontroller development is you can get from zero to blinking LED almost as quickly as you could get from zero to hello world back on those old constrained devices. So it's appealing for kids that are starting to get involved in it. It's appealing, I think, for adults who want to get back and honing their algorithms and really dealing with performance and memory and to bring those skills back to their day jobs and whatnot. And quite frankly, it's just really fun to have something that's sitting on your desktop that's running code that you wrote, but it looks like a circuit board. I'm just looking at the pile of things that I have over here. It looks like a bare circuit board with some LEDs blinking on it, right? And I just think that's pretty awesome.
I think it's pretty awesome that Microsoft is letting you make that a part of the public persona that and part of your job, and that's very, very cool.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I didn't give them a whole lot of choice with that, so and everybody seemed to be okay with it, so there I go.